few weeks back, I took the time to address the varying levels of what we can achieve and define as success in our outdoor ventures. The flip side to that coin is that we can also very much wind up with what can only be termed failures, and some carry with them modifiers such as epic, complete, or catastrophic. A failure can be as benign as failing to achieve a specific goal, but it can also be so much more than that. Frankly, I think most folks deal with some sort of failure on a pretty frequent basis. I know I do. It's a part of life. The trick, I think, is twofold. Whatever those failures are, keep them to a minimum or as small as possible, and also, don't let them get you down. Move on and seek out future success. As failures pertain to outdoor ventures, there can be so many types. For example, I failed to kill a moose this fall. It sucks, but it happens. I am now getting myself geeked up about winter moose season. On 5 other occasions, I have failed in the fall, but succeeded in the winter. Make no mistake, failures and successes can both be very fleeting things. Today, I'd like to think about a specific type of outdoor failure, though that's really just a small part of what I plan to share. I'd also like to take today to give a shout out to the best boss I've ever had. Yes, I did express that in the past tense, and it makes me sad. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. So the outdoor failure I'm thinking of today is getting stuck. For something that can bring on a high level of frustration, try being stuck when you have outdoor plans in place that are now being interrupted, or, in some cases, canceled altogether by being stuck. What brought this to mind for me recently is that I had a magnificent fall day trip planned to work on my remote property. I cherry-picked a day off from work and had big plans for the day. Alas, getting stuck totally throttled those plans. In this particular case, getting stuck, such as it was, involved the four-wheel drive going out on my truck. What this meant was my boat and trailer was in the lake, with no way to pull it out. Furthermore, I backed in slightly off from where I meant to, and I couldn't get the boat off the trailer. The long and short of it was that my plans failed. I didn't even make it to my land, let alone get anything done. And I had to have a friend come and pull my boat and trailer out of the lake. Thanks, Michael. Even though my truck itself was not incapacitated to the point of not moving, I still consider that I was stuck. Anytime your mechanical means of conveyance won't work and you need assistance, you're stuck. Patrick McManus, whom I quote from time to time, has many stories about being stuck, though pretty much all of his center on running out of gas in really remote locations. I can't say running out of gas is anything I've done much. I have known people who have made it something of an art form. No, when I get stuck, it's usually related to mechanical failure of some sort, or the environment itself has conspired to halt my progress. Let me relate a few such instances. A classic getting stuck moment happened to me in high school as a couple of friends and I tried to make our way to our favorite fishing pond, the one in Lincoln County, Kansas, belonging to Merle Shoemaker. You know how some people dream of being rich? When I was young, one of my biggest fantasies about being rich was that I could someday buy his pond from him. I liked it that much. I still wonder about it 30-plus years later. I can see on Google Earth it's still there, and wonder what it would take to make it mine. The memories alone are worth a bunch. But I digress. That particular day was a spring day, and it had rained a bunch recently. Not to be thwarted, I was convinced that my 1976 Dodge D100, two-wheel drive, not four, would have no trouble making it in on the 3/4-mile track that went from the county dirt road up the canyon to the pond. I was wrong. Halfway there, we got stuck. Really stuck. As in, the mud prevented the doors from opening stuck. 4 miles of hiking later, we came to the nearest farmhouse, and the gentleman who lived there was kind enough to come and pull us out with his tractor. That was an outdoor failure. We didn't fish that day, and we needed help in order to put our tails between our legs and head for home. A less common way of getting stuck happened to me during my sophomore year of college. Well, my first sophomore year, that is. It involved the same D100 truck. I still own that truck. A few days before Halloween of that year, I had to have emergency surgery to remove a very close-to-bursting appendix. A part of the follow-up to that was that I was told not to lift more than 10 pounds for 8 weeks. My wound and stitches stretched for over 4 inches along my lower abdomen. Well, 2 weeks after that, was my normal starting point for my first trap line of the year, for coyote. Trapping helped to pay for school, so it wasn't just for recreation. I remember sitting in Dr. Johnson's speech class. It was a beautiful fall day. He was late getting to the classroom, and it provided me with a singular epiphany. I needed to be trapping, not sitting in class. 2 hours later, I was making my first sets of the year at a remote for Kansas area near a local reservoir. So, how did I get stuck? A few days later, I tried to cross a grassy-covered drainage ditch between two fields. The ditch was a shallow U-shape and maybe 100 yards across. The grass was covered in heavy dew. My two-wheel drive truck also had, at the time, tires that were somewhat lacking in the tread department. In trying to cross that ditch, I found that the dew was enough that my truck wouldn't move forward. Of course, I was halfway across when it refused to go forward any further. There I was, unable to lift as much as 10 pounds. The solution? I actually got myself out of that predicament, though it took a long time. I took a small bucket that I used to carry dry dirt to my coyote sets. And I carried dry dirt, a bucket at a time, and moved my truck forward on paths of dry dirt a foot at a time, until I had traction enough to provide momentum to get me up and out. As I've gotten older, I've also gotten better at not getting stuck, my recent debacle at Snake Lake notwithstanding. Well, who plans on their four-wheel drive going out? There's probably some of that wisdom with age stuff that comes into play here, as far as getting stuck less. One of my more memorable times while living in Alaska, and getting stuck, was on my wedding day. My bride-to-be and I were on our way to the wedding location. It was March, and there was a lot of snow that year. We came to a T in the road, and I had to swing wide to the right to avoid a car that was turning onto our road and was coming into our lane. As a result, the right side of my truck dropped into the snow-filled ditch, leaving us very much stuck. Fortunately, it was a short-term deal. A local fellow, whose first name I remember is Oscar, stopped and pulled us out. Thanks again, Oscar. And we were quickly back on our way to get married. In Alaska, we have any number of mechanical means of conveyance that can leave us stuck, to include trucks, cars, skiffs, ATVs, snow machines, planes, and probably other things I'm not thinking about right now. Sometimes those ways of getting stuck are of a mechanical nature, like with my truck a couple of weeks ago, or sometimes it's the result of bad decision-making. When it comes to getting stuck, and that ranking as an outdoor failure, keep in mind a few things. First, as we get older, we do, generally, make better decisions, which can help to keep us from getting stuck. We learn to heed that little voice in the back of our heads that a bad idea really is that, a bad idea. We also learn to have the right tools with us to assist us if we get stuck, such as a winch on an ATV or chains for the tires. Also, with a little luck, we've managed to befriend enough good people that we have options for rescuers, should it come to that. Transitioning to a different topic with which to close today, I feel like I'm a little bit stuck on a professional level. It is with a tremendous degree of sadness and the utmost respect that I share, as of last Friday, Alan Miller has retired from Togiak Refuge and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Alan spent 22 years at Togiak, after 6 years working with sturgeon on the Snake and Columbia Rivers in the lower 48. According to Alan, he and his wife Lori came to Alaska for 2 years for a big adventure. They fell in love with the area and never left. As with many who have come here from elsewhere, they have aging family members they need to focus on now. They do have family, kids and grandkids, in Dillingham and around the state, so the plan is to split time between here and Colorado. But the bottom line is, for the refuge and service, that Alan is no longer an employee. Alan served for much of that 22 years in the dual role of visitor services manager and law enforcement officer. Frankly, either of those positions is more than a full-time job for a refuge the size of Togiak. He handled both with remarkable aplomb and professionalism. I have never heard a single person utter one word about Alan that could be construed in a negative fashion. More recently, he finished out his career as Togiak's deputy refuge manager. Alan is the one who hired me away from the public school back in 2007. He has been, without a doubt, the best supervisor I've ever had over the course of my professional career. As a person and as a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service employee, he set an unwavering example of how to be and how to live life. I have never been around anyone who had such a level of dedication, nor anyone who was as good a communicator or had the level of fairness that Alan possessed. He did not, in my opinion, have a weakness as a boss. Well, he still has those traits, I'm sure. It's his retirement, not his funeral. I have joked in recent days that I've been looking on Amazon for sackcloth and ashes, and I've been brushing up on my wailing and gnashing of teeth. I am going to severely miss Alan's presence, on many levels, as will a great many people. Togiak Refuge and the service as a whole will be a lot less for not having him walk into the refuge office each day. I wish him and Lori the very, very best in this next phase of their life, and I'm thankful I had the opportunity to call him a colleague. I continue to be grateful that I can call him a friend. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.